This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
So maybe you've noticed a location like this where you live, that one spot in an otherwise thriving commercial district that just can't seem to sustain a business. I've stumbled across locations like this in every neighborhood I've ever lived in. But this one spot in Cincinnati, it was a particularly stark case. Starting in college and continuing to the present day, every time I'd go back home for the holidays or for just random visits to my parents, there seemed to be a new coat of paint on that building, a new sign above the door, another business bravely making a go of it in that one cursed location.
Last year, Fast Company named the podcast production business Gimlet Media one of the top 10 most innovative media companies in the world. Cincinnati native Alex Bloomberg is Gimlet's CEO and co-founder. You just heard from him, and he spent his entire career telling stories. He currently hosts the Gimlet Media podcast Startup, which has worked as a reporter. He co-founded Planet Money and was producer for This American Life. He's going to be in Cincinnati next week to speak at the Mercantile Library, and he joins us this afternoon to discuss the art and business of storytelling and podcasting. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Alex, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
The audio clip that we played as we were starting this segment, that was from a startup podcast about 2680 Madison Road in Hyde Park, a building that happens to sit at that particular location. And I have to tell you, I started listening to this story, and I thought I was going to take some breaks in between and maybe come back to it here and there. But once I started, I couldn't stop. I mean, it was like a really good book. I just couldn't put it down. But, you know, the interesting thing is it's all about a building. And you had your own observations about that building since you lived in the area. But I'm just wondering, tell us why you thought this would make for such an interesting story.
Well, we were a little worried about it, to be honest, because I mean, I think it was a very different... I mean, this whole season of Startup, season three, I mean, you know, the entire Startup podcast has been a little bit of an experiment from the beginning. I never thought that it would be sort of lasting as long as it has. But this season in particular, the team made a decision to do sort of individual stories and not do the serialized kind of follow one company through 10 episodes that we'd done in the past two seasons. So, and we thought we wanted to focus on sort of endings and new beginnings. And so one of the ideas that was bouncing around the team was just sort of like this idea of the cursed corner, you know, and it's this, I think a lot of people who live in, you know, live places have seen this, you know, with this one location that you just can't just seem to make it work. And then I remember, you know, 2680 Madison, and I was like, well, we could do that. Because the nice thing about that was that I had been sort of coming back to it over 40 years, you know, since I was born, you know, since growing up in Cincinnati and then all the way till now, I'd just seen it change hands so many times. So it felt like, well, if there's something to be done there, we should do it. And so we sent our reporter, Caitlin Roberts, out to sort of dig into it. And what we were hoping is we could use that as a frame to sort of tell a sort of a universal story about starting businesses and ending them and all the problems that can go wrong. And in fact, that's what we found.
Yeah. What was it? 7 businesses cycled through that site in about a 30-year period.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's been sitting vacant for the last, I think, 4 years, right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. I haven't looked at it recently, but that's probably true with this case. You know, it sounds like it's, as you were saying, it's a cursed building, or maybe I look at it as a case of bad karma for the building. Have you ever come across any other places that were as weird? I mean, just the things that happened or just absolutely odd. Have you ever come across anything as weird in any of the stories that you've done?
Well, I mean, that's sort of what we're looking for, is just things that just are surprising or strange or weird or odd. I mean, certainly. I mean, I think going back through my career in journalism, I think when I was, you know, one of the very first stories I did, this goes back to the 2000 election, we were doing a story about the Republican primary in New Hampshire, and this was for This American Life, and I stumbled across this. Steve Forbes was running at the time, and Steve Forbes was the son of the, you know, Malcolm Forbes, the billionaire businessman who started Forbes magazine, Steve Forbes was running on this very sort of flat tax. He had a flat tax proposal. And I stumbled across one of his rallies, and there was all these teenagers there. And he had the loudest, most vociferous teenage supporters of any of the candidates. And I was just thinking, like, how is this platform connecting to these teens? And it turns out there was a very fascinating story of this one particular Forbes campaign staffer who just had a great way with teens. And so I ended up doing a story about him and the teens who supported Steve Forbes. And it was just really charming and fun and weird. And I just sort of got all these ins and outs of the way it worked up there. It was really fun. And I feel like that's what we've been doing. That's sort of what I try to find in every story I do.
What hit me as I listened to the story about 2680 Madison is that it was really more about the people associated with the building, more than the building itself, that made it so fascinating. Do you think that everyone and everything has an interesting story if you just dig hard enough to find it?
I think everyone has an interesting story. I don't think everyone can tell it in an interesting way. And this is something that I think about a lot. I taught a radio documentary class at Columbia, you know, here in New York, and I teach these sort of continuing education courses here at Gimlet, sort of for our new staff. And something that I talk about a lot because I think I think it's true. Everyone has their own story. Everybody's story can be, you know, universal and interesting to people. But you have to be able to tell it. And so our job as journalists, especially working in the field of audio, is to figure out who is a great narrator of their own experience and who isn't, and how do you help the people who aren't tell their story better. But I also feel like it's something that that you hear a lot, especially in the journalism world, where everybody has a story and. I don't know, it can take you down a bad path. You know, I think you also want to just be clear that, like, you know, you want people to be engaged in the stories you're telling. And so there has to be something special to the stories that you're choosing to put on the radio or put in your podcast. And so and sometimes, like, everybody has a story can be a little bit shorthand for sort of like, well, this is okay, but it's not the best story, but we're going to put it up anyway. And I don't like it in that sense.
Alex, what's the process that you use for deciding what makes for a great story to tell?
I mean, I think the one thing that that my one true skill, I think, is in editing radio or audio stories. Everything else, I'm just trying to do the best I can. I'm just getting by. I think the thing that I've learned above all else that makes me a good editor is that I pay attention to my own boredom. And that sounds like a little bit harsh, but I think it's true. I think when people are listening, you as an editor, you're the proxy for the listener. And we're busy people. We're out there doing stuff. Like, a lot of the people listening right now are, like, you know, getting, you know, their kids in the car or cleaning the kitchen or working or whatever they're doing, you know? And so we have to be aware of, like, when we're saying something that's like where we're losing those people, you know? And so as an editor, you have to be in touch with the part of your stomach there, the part of your brain that starts to drift off. And then figure out, like, okay, what can we cut that part? How can we make it more engaging? If we reorder it, will that make it better? You know? And so, but I think the main thing is to be aware of your own boredom. That's how you can sort of really make a story great.
Okay, so that's a good rule. Pay attention to your own boredom. How did you develop your storytelling style?
I mean, it was just a lot of trial and error. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, I got to learn from one of the masters. I started my career working with This American Life and Ira Glass, and so, I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Ira taught me most of what I know today. I think that was, you know, watching him, sort of going out and doing stories with him, having him edit my stories, was just tremendously valuable.
What's been your favorite story of all the ones that you've done?
Wow.
You've done so many.
There's been a lot. I think one of my favorites and one of the most pivotal stories, certainly for my career, was the show we did for This American Life, that I did called The Giant Pool of Money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Adam Davidson and I co-reported that story, and it was about the aftermath of the housing crisis. It was about the housing crisis, and it just grew out of this desire to try to understand what was going on, what had changed in banking that was now making what seemed like what would have seemed like a really bad loan seem like a good loan. And so we set out to answer that question, and along the way we learned about this, you know, the sort of all the ways that banking had changed and how the system was now set up to sort of encourage riskier and riskier lending. And to me it was interesting because it was the perfect blend of what I like to do, which is to sort of combine the human stories with sort of like with an analysis of how the system is working. I like stories that have human beings inside of systems, because I think sometimes as people we crave sort of like, this person was a bad person or a good person. And I think it's often much more complicated than that, and the complicated stories are harder to tell. But if you can tell, here's the role that this human played in this system, then I feel like it can make that story interesting without having to reduce it to a villain-victim story. Sometimes there are villains and victims, don't get me wrong. But I think a lot of times journalists especially try to put everything into a villain-victim narrative, when I think a lot of times the truth is just a lot more nuanced and gray than that.
So this is sort of like the building story, in that you, by telling the stories of the people involved with the building, and in this case in telling the stories of people involved with the financial crisis and putting a human face on it, it comes across much better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And you need the right people, though, to tell that story, because you need people who are in touch also with their own conflicted motives. And I think that's what makes it work, is if you can have somebody who's like, yeah, I did that, and here's why I did that, but at the time I wasn't entirely sure that this was the thing I should be doing, or I had misgivings about the thing I was doing, or I have some kind of mixed feelings about my actions. To me, that's what I like. If I can get emotional honesty out of people, that's what I'm always looking for.
So what's been your least favorite story? Dare I ask that?
Oh, my least favorite story. I don't know. I mean, there's stories that have been that I haven't had a chance. Let me see. My least favorite story. I try not to dwell on the least favorite stories.
that's probably a good way to be, Alex.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I will tell you the first, because it actually has a Cincinnati connection. The very first story I did for This American Life ever, which was back in the 90s, was about a guy from Cincinnati. It was a story that I'd heard about from some friends of my parents. And it was about this guy who... It was about a guy who'd been very well off, very, you know, sort of like a prominent businessman in Cincinnati, and then sort of just ended up robbing a bank just out of nowhere. I ended up telling that story, and I went and interviewed him and everything. And it was early on, and I don't think, right, it was one of those things where I had sort of all these thoughts or suspicions about his motives that I didn't necessarily voice to him. But I still sort of crept them into the story in a certain way, and I don't like doing that. Like, I feel like if I, as the reporter, have some sort of suspicion about somebody's motives, it's my duty to voice it to them so that I can get their response. And often that gives you more interesting stories. And so when I think back about that, there's always like a little bit of like, I didn't handle that right. I wish I'd handled it differently.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join in the conversation with Alex Bloomberg, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So tell us how Gimlet Media got its start, Alex.
Well, Gimlet got its start because I'd been working in podcasting for a while now. I was working at This American Life. I'd started Planet Money with Adam Davidson, and it was going really well. And the audiences kept growing. The audiences were super enthusiastic. They were growing double-digit percentages year over year. And it just felt like, hey, we're onto something here, you know, and there should be more of this stuff. Because essentially what Planet Money had been, Planet Money had just taken the tools of storytelling that I'd learned at This American Life and applied them to finance and economics. And it worked. And so I was thinking, like, well, if you can do that, if you can take those tools and apply them to the arcane and sometimes boring subject of economics, then there's all sorts of things that you could use them for. You know, there's all sorts of subject areas you could apply them for. You could do a tech show or a car show, or, you know. So it just felt like there's the demand is there, and we should do it. So I ended up sort of first I sort of thought maybe I'll try to do it within the system, but it just proved more and more difficult to do that. And so I ended up quitting my job and going off and trying to raise money to start this podcasting company. And it was much harder than I thought it would be, much harder. And I ended up documenting my travails as I was going through them. So I would bring my tape recorder to all the VC meetings that I was having, trying to raise the money to start the company. And I would have, and I would document late night conversations with my wife about whether or not this is the right thing for us to be doing with our family. And when I found a co-founder, we documented our equity percentage negotiation. We tape recorded the whole thing. And so I was just trying, it was just a very inside view on the whole process of business formation. And once we released those, they became pretty successful right away. They sort of tapped into something that was going on in the world. And so that became a somewhat popular podcast startup. And then from that, we were able to launch our other podcasts. And so now we have a bunch. We have we just launched our latest one, our sixth podcast, Science Versus, which is up, and we have a bunch of others. Reply All, surprisingly awesome, Sampler, a bunch of shows.
Is it true you were originally thinking about calling this the American Podcasting Corporation?
It's true. It's absolutely true. That was actually my, and if I'm honest, that's still the name that I sort of wish we'd called it, even though everybody has. I now have been convinced that I'm wrong, but I still can't stop feeling that way. I still like that name better. But I think it was, definitely enough people had told me that I'm crazy that I really
was. And that's what stopped you.
Yeah.
That and the fact that APC might be confusing with another company that
yeah,
sounds
there's
like
a clothing
that, yeah.
company called APC,
yeah. And a broadcasting company called ABC. So
yeah, exactly.
Get quite confusing. startup. What? Go back to that for a minute. What exactly are you focusing on? Tell us about that particular show.
So startup. It began as more like I didn't think we would do more than four or five episodes of it. I thought it would just be a way for me to attract attention to this new company that I'm starting. And I figured I'd just tell the story. I figured I'm in the middle of this thing. I'm actually talking to all these interesting people. It's an actual interesting story. So I'll just document it and put it up as a podcast. And it'll be almost like a marketing ploy. But what ended up happening is like the story just got more and more interesting as I was telling it. And once we launched, it became clear that it was like tapping a nerve of like all these other people who'd started businesses or entrepreneurs. It was the first time they'd sort of heard their honest experiences reflected really in media, that it was like that it's not all about killing it all the time, and that actually it's a lot about anxiety and self-doubt and trying to figure out what's the right thing and not knowing what to do next. And it's just a lot of feeling your way forward and a lot of rejection. And so so once we sort of realized that we hit a nerve a little bit, we ended up doing more episodes. And so the first season ended up being, I think, 13 episodes. And then we decided, like, it's too time-consuming for me to be the CEO of the company and to be hosting this podcast. So it's an immense amount of work. And so we decided we'll hire a team and we'll profile other companies. And so the second season was about a company, an online dating company called Dating Ring. And then the third season was about a bunch of different companies. And then we've got the fourth season coming up that's going to launch in October. And that's very exciting. We're following a really fascinating founder who's doing something pretty fascinating. And I'm really excited about that.
Beth in Hyde Park joins us now. Hi, Beth. Go right ahead.
Hi. Good to talk to you. I was really shocked in listening to Alex speaking about his least favorite story about a bank robbery that took place, because I was in the bank. I was an employee.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow,
yeah,
Beth.
So I was, ruining the fact that I was there that day, but also that I was not familiar with your coverage of it. And I had a lot of problems with the story, too.
I bet you did. I bet you did, Beth.
Beth, you were, when did this happen?
This was many years ago, yeah. Probably 15 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And I was assistant manager in the branch, and he came in. He was like the first customer, so. And we noticed, like, wow, he's got a hood over his head.
Hey, and Beth, unfortunately, we've run out of time here, but thank you for the call. Talk about an interesting coincidence there. Yeah. Alex, thank you so much.
I hope to see you in Mercantile.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Alex Bloomberg, who's the Gimlet Media CEO and co-founder, and he's the host of the podcast Startup.